So we'll start from, I'll share the screen over here. We're going to start from, if you see on your page, it's actually Shlishi. It is Pasuk Chaf in the Perek, and we're going to read till the end of the Perek. Okay, so it says, Vayidabra Hashem al Moshe vel Aaron. Remember, I know we read this Pasuk because we did a beautiful Arach Chaim, which we will not do again, but this just leads on, and it says like this. So here we have, after they've come with their pans and whatever, so he says, Hashem says to Moshe, actually they didn't come yet with their pans, they were told that they should come with their pans, but now Hashem says to Moshe and to Aaron, Hibadlu mitoicha eida hazais, separate yourselves from amidst this assembly, v'achale oisam kiraga, and I shall destroy them in an instant. And we discussed, what does this assembly mean? It sounds like a whole bunch of people. It does mean we're talking about Korach specifically, obviously, and Dasan and Aviram, and there were 250 men that were joining them. Although even specifically, more specifically than that, it's really talking about Korach and Dasan and Aviram. That's really the three main ringleaders, and they're the ones that everybody has to stay far apart from them. And we see how Moshe Rabbeinu reacts. Ve'yiplu al pnei, and Moshe and Aaron fall on their faces. Ve'yomer, and they say, Kel elokei haruchais, the God of the spirits, l'chol basar, of all flesh, ha'ish echad yechta, will one man sin? Val kol ha'eda tiktaif, and you will be, but you will be angry with the entire assembly. This is a very famous pasuk, and we did discuss it, and it sounds like Moshe misunderstood Hashem to mean that who is Hashem going to destroy? Kol ha'eda, the entire Bnei Yisrael. That's not what Hashem meant. Hashem meant I'm only going to destroy Korach and his people. But the reason that Moshe Rabbeinu even had that misunderstanding was because the truth is it wasn't a total misunderstanding. The truth is, as we said last week, and the Kli Yakar we mentioned a few weeks ago, all of the people who were standing there with all the Bnei Yisrael, not just Korach, not just Dasan and Aviram, not just the 250 men from the tribe of Reuven, but the entire Jewish people who came to watch the spectacle, on some level were influenced by Korach. That was the power that Korach had. And in the depths of their heart, they questioned Moshe Rabbeinu. It says at the beginning, Moshe was 100% popular, that everybody thought Korach is crazy. But Korach managed, because he had such a koyach, it's an incredible thing. He was such a brilliant man, and he had such a koyach that he managed to actually influence the people to actually start to think maybe he has a point. Not only maybe he has a point intellectually, and this is even worse, but he really means our best interest. And that's the horrible part, in a way, for Moshe. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, as we know, as we've discussed and we learned just now, we went through Pesach, put his whole life aside, left his wife and children, went to Mitzrayim to take the Jewish people out, put himself in danger to go to Paray so many times. He didn't want to. We know how it took a whole week for Hashem to convince him by the Sneh to take on the leadership. We know Moshe Rabbeinu was the ultimate in humility. And here Moshe Rabbeinu says, I did everything for the sake of the Jewish people. And yet, in 1 minute almost, somebody can come and put into their mind and twist the way they think to actually suspect that I did this because I want to be a leader, for whatever the reason, whatever, you know, reasons, whatever motivations, personal motivations I might have. So we see that in over here, when Hashem says that I'm going to destroy, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu is worried. Maybe it's true that Hashem will destroy the entire Bnei Yisrael, because in truth, on a certain level, they deserve to be destroyed. But what's Moshe Rabbeinu's logic? He says, listen, it could be they've done something wrong, but in truth, who should you destroy? Not the everybody, only the ringleaders. Where does he base that on? It's quite an interesting thing. So the Kli Yakar tells us something very interesting, that we do find that we know that there is a very big difference. Good morning, good morning. There's a very big difference between somebody who's a ringleader and somebody who's just influenced, so to speak. The influencer and the influenced. So we have, very interesting thing, we have the first story in the Torah where we have anybody doing anything wrong. What's the first story in the Torah where? Okay, what happens? So what happens over there? Who's the influencer? The Nachash. No, the woman. We'll go to the Nachash. What happens to the Nachash? He gets the harshest punishment of all. Moshe Rabbeinu says, there, even though The Nachash is an animal, and who did he influence? First Chava, and then Chava influenced Adam. Nevertheless, there's a difference in their punishments. You cannot punish everybody in the same way. The one who's the ringleader should get more severely punished and identified as the ringleader. The ones who are influenced, obviously, they should have been stronger, but nevertheless, they don't deserve the same treatment. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu feels, and that's why he says these sharp words. But as we said, we did discuss this, and just, again, it's a fascinating concept in Torah. You know, there are so many philosophical ideas that come through. Just generally, you know, we see, unfortunately, we experience many times different things, and you, whether we experience it personally, or you see it in others, you know, and you... Yes, exactly right. And you see... Yeah, so you think, like, how could it... Yeah. And you see, and you start to question. The fascinating thing I always say, and this is a very beautiful thing of Torah, Yiddishkeit is a religion that, it's not like the, I don't know, look, I shouldn't say not like, because I don't know about other religions, but it seems that other religions are a little bit more dogmatic in the sense where they're not allowed to question. Everything is just whatever, except in a very submissive way. Now, we do have a concept of being batal to Hashem, there's no question about it. We have emunah, we have bitachin, and that's the foundation of everything. Good morning. But nevertheless, in Yiddishkeit, we are allowed to question. Question doesn't mean to question our faith, but it means to question because we're people and Hashem gave us a brain. And the fact that we have a brain from God means we're meant to use it. And the nature of the intellect is to question. Doesn't mean we're always going to have an answer. That's for sure. And I find this is something that, I don't know, for me, it's a big thing that a lot of times the questions are more powerful and stronger and seem to have more weight than the answers. But that's okay also. As Jews, that's the other side of it. We can live with the questions. You know, there's the famous story, I forgot who wrote about it, it was somebody who writes beautifully, described how they went to somewhere to daven, to a shul, and it was, I think, on the Lower East Side, and it was in the 1950s, and there were two people sitting there, and they were survivors. And they were, and you're talking not that long after the war, and they were quite bitter, and they went and they were discussing all the, and they were, and it was challenging, and they were like, you know, the way they were talking, you could think that they didn't have, you know, they totally left everything. But then the day was, you know, it was winter and it was coming time, and all of a sudden you see them both standing up. Oh, it's time to daven mincha. Here they are questioning everything 1 minute before, but when it comes time to daven mincha, it's time to daven mincha. As a Jew, we live with this. It's not a contradiction. It's not a contradiction at all. And this is the idea. The idea is also another very powerful thing to remember. In Torah, you can have a question. Sometimes you can have an answer. But the answer doesn't remove the question. The question remains a question because it's also part of Torah and it has its own validity. And there's nothing wrong with that. So it's important to remember that. That's the way we live. And it's fine. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, everybody is going to suffer in the same way. And this is a question that we have on many times. But we have to understand, Moshe already asked the question. And Moshe Rabbeinu himself was the most loyal, faithful, if you want to say, not just shepherd of the Jewish people, but person who was so connected and had such a deep understanding and deep knowledge of the Eibishter more than any of us will ever have. But we're going to leave that there and we're going to move on now and let's see what happens. So Hashem obviously immediately corrects Moshe Rabbeinu and he says, I didn't mean that everybody is going to die. Sorry, yeah, there's another copy there. Beautiful. Okay, so we say like this in Pasuk Chav Gimel, Vayidaber. So now Hashem clarifies. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Lemer. So Hashem says to Moshe, Daber el ha'eda, speak to the congregation, lemar, saying, sorry, just scroll down. Daber el ha'eda lemar, he'olu misaviv lemishkan, kairach dasan ba'aviram, which means that you should get yourselves away from all around the place where kairach dasan and aviram live. Move. That's what they have to tell the Jewish people. Okay, why? Why do they have to move? Because... But it's interesting because Hashem doesn't say yet. But what happens? Vayakam Moshe. So Moshe immediately gets up. Vayelech el Dasan va'aviram. And he goes to Dasan va'aviram. Vayelchu achrav ziknei Yisrael. And who follows Moshe Rabbeinu? All the elders, which we know these were the 70, the great men. Before we go further, I just want to see what Rashi says. We see something very interesting happening here. Because here already, let's understand, here already, Moshe Rabbeinu understands that something terrible is going to happen to Korach, to Dathan, and to Aviram. They have already done something terrible. They have already created such a rift and such a, I don't know if you want to say, such a terrible thoughts in the hearts of the Jewish people. And yet this is a very beautiful pasuk in and of itself that we might not even realize how magnificent it is. Despite all of that, what does Moshe do? He gets up and he goes to who? To Dathan and Aviram. Initially, he had called that Dathan and Aviram should come to him. And that's really what should have happened. We know he was the leader. They are just the simple people, so to speak. Of course they should come to him, especially if they have a complaint. Who should they come? They should come to Moshe. They don't come to Moshe. Not only don't they come, but they instigate a whole rebellion. And what does Moshe do? He lowers himself to go to them. It's incredible. It's even just this pasuk alone is unbelievable. You can see the way Moshe is acting, even though, and another important thing to put in, we said Moshe is extremely devastated. Emotionally, he's hurt. Not because he's hurt slighted. He's devastated because of the terrible effect of what they're doing. And we will see soon, I mean, the machlekes, as we said, it's the worst thing possible. So we're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu not in the optimum, not when he's standing apart, you know, standing there on Har Sinai and there's a revelation of Hashem and everything is so wonderful. And, you know, he's standing in such a dveikus and whatever. We're talking about in a time when emotionally he's being very affected and yet he has the ability to stand above and to remain so incredibly humble and to see the whole picture and what's beneficial, what's the best thing to do. Not what's the best thing for me, what's the best thing for the situation. It's incredible. Even the small details of it is actually quite mind-boggling. But I just wanted to see, sorry, go back just to see, just wanted to suffer to see the Rashis. We'll read, I know it's good to read the Psukim first, but I just want to see the Rashis also as we go along. If we look on the first page in Rashi Chav Gimel, okay, you know, we did that Rashi. So let's just do the second one. Ha'ish Echad, the one man that is Korach, hu ha'chayte, as we said, Korach is the sinner. Va'ata, and now he said, but you, al kol ha'ida tiktzef, you'll be angry with the entire assembly. So that's why Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Hashem says to him, yofe amartem, you have spoken properly. Ani yoideya, so it's actually very beautiful words. I know, umaydiya, and I will make known. Michata, who has sinned, umi loichata, and who has not sinned. What does this mean? Because we all know the only one who knows what's going on in the heart of another is Hashem. So everybody is standing there, the entire Jewish nation is standing there as Korach is setting up, you know, putting his argument that Moshe did something terrible, and they are influencing the Jewish people. But how do we know what people are thinking? Only Hashem knows. And that's why Hashem says, now I will let everybody know. I will identify the thoughts of what people are thinking. You will see who is on whose side, so to speak. Okay, look on the next page that we were saying in Pasuk Chav Dalid, the Rashi. See? So Rashi says that you should go up. So as Uncle says, Istalaku, get yourselves away. Misvivais Mishkan Korach, from the vicinity of the abode of Korach. So they have to make mamish a separation because we know something terrible is about to happen. And then Vayakam Moshe, why did Moshe Rabbeinu get up? So very interesting, as we just said, he got up to go to Dathan and Aviram. And this is important, this Rashi. He, look at this, even at this point already, after the whole night of them riling up the people, and Moshe was not unaware. When we say Moshe is a Raya Mehemna, a faithful shepherd, what that means is that he was a faithful shepherd in the sense he cared about the Jewish people, but he also knew, he had the finger on the tap. He knew what was going on. Moshe knew exactly how people felt about him. He felt it. He was understanding. He was a brilliant man, a brilliant leader. So it's not that he's in denial and he thinks only something small is happening and he puts things under the carpet. He knew what was going on. And nevertheless, look what he says. He thought, Kesavar sheyisu laipanim, that they would treat him graciously. V'loy asu, but they did not do so. Isn't it incredible? Even at this point, he thought that Dathan and Aviram will actually treat Moshe with respect. Why should he think that after what they've just been saying about him the whole night, telling everybody that all he did was he wanted the leadership for himself and he appointed Aaron on his own and all the terrible things that they were saying. And he took us out of Egypt and he shouldn't have all terrible stuff. How could it be that he still thought that they would greet him graciously.
Who's that? Moshe.
Yeah, Moshe. Moshe thought. That's what Rashi says.
That's interesting, though, because isn't it obvious that didn't come to him in the first place?
I know. That's exactly right. Exactly right, yeah. That's what... It's how does that work? It's unbelievable. Again, so it's such a powerful thing. I was talking about living with contradictions. You know, you can be... Like, some people think that in order to judge people favorably, you have to be a little bit in la-la land. You know, some people are a little bit out of it. So everything's wonderful. You know, they look at life with rose-colored glasses. It's very nice. Actually, it's a nice way to live. But some people are more real. They see things of how they are. You know, it's like this, it's like this. And sometimes people think that if we're more real, if we see the situation how it is, well, then that makes us definitely going to be critical people. It doesn't have to go together. Believe it or not, it doesn't have to. Moshe Rabbeinu is the model, and it's incredible. It's not easy. You have to work on yourself for this ability to see things how they are and still find a way of rationalizing and hoping and having confidence and looking at things that there could still be a positive outcome. It's incredible. It's quite a, it's a real talent, but it's something that we learn. We have to learn from. It's unbelievable. So this is Moshe. So he's still hoping that there's still some humanity in them. There's still some godly, which there is. Except as we said last week, the Aruch Haim said they were pure evil. Do you remember? So they didn't have it. Moshe couldn't relate to that because Moshe is such pure good that he couldn't even understand that there should be such a thing as such evil, such negativity that cannot have a shred of respect, a shred of understanding of the Eibishter. Okay, let's go on and see what happens. So what happens? And now we see it very strongly. Look in the next pasuk, quite amazing. Vayidaber el ha'eda. So they go and not only Moshe, but even this Kenim, so this is quite honorable. Then in pasuk Chavav, Vayidaber el ha'eda lemer. So Moshe Rabbeinu turns to the congregation and he says to them, Suruna me'al ohalei ha'anoshim harishayim ha'ele. It's such contradictions here, it's quite amazing. Because here, first he's going to them and we're saying he's hoping they're going to come out and treat him with some dignity and respect. At the same time, before they even manage to come out, Moshe turns to the people because this is what he's supposed to be doing, right? Hashem said, tell the people to go away, right? To separate themselves. So he's very worried. He obviously has to do the mission and he doesn't want anything bad to happen to Bnei Yisrael. So how does he tell them to separate? He calls the people. We're talking about Korach, Dathan, and Aviram, not just people, the wicked people. Hashem didn't say that. Moshe adds that word, you see. Separate you from yourself, from these wicked people, from these evil people. Ha'anoshim ha'rishoyim ha'ele. Va'al tigu b'chol asher lohem. Do not touch anything that belongs to them. Pen tisafu b'chol chatoysam. Because maybe you will perish because all of their sins. In other words, if you take, and remember we said Korach was mega wealthy, if you think that you should save some of the wealth and you'll maybe use it for something good, don't touch it. In Chumash they call it the language that the Mefarshim say, it's like cherim, it's like untouchable. You know, it's stuff that you've got to keep away from. In other words, the negativity, the impurity that they possessed literally spread to their belongings as well. It wasn't something that could even be elevated anymore. Couldn't be used in a positive way. And here Moshe warns everybody, this beautiful Midrashim, I know when you're children, you learn about them, that anything that belonged to Korach, remember we say like he was very wealthy, but let's just say one day Korach came to visit you, and I don't know, he wrote something, and he forgot his pen in your house, or whatever it may be. It says that when Korach, well, we'll see if Korach himself, but when whoever it was that was swallowed up, it says that even the pen that was in your house rolled down and got swallowed up with Korach. So it's quite amazing that everything that belonged to Korach disappeared. Okay, but let's go on and see what happens here. Vayalu, and we're going to see a few mefarshim soon on this. Vayalu me'al mishkan Korach. So they got up, like away from, so to speak, the mishkan of Korach, where Korach and Dathan and Aviram lived, misav from around. And then, that's so all the people are at a distance. So just also it's important because the imagery is very important to picture. What's happening? Dathan, Aviram, and Korach are still in their tents. Moshe tells everybody to separate themselves, which already means to the people that something terrible is about to happen. You know, when you go outside and there's people around, you sense, right? Everybody senses the feeling, the feeling, the emotion that's going on. The people initially had been influenced, remember we said, so therefore they would have been standing close. Now, Dasan and Avirim and Kayuch are coming out of their tent. And what will they see immediately? That the people have moved away. And not only have they moved away, but the faces of the people would have been actually full of fear. They would have been like, something is about to happen. And anyways, look what happened. So what happens? They come out, Yatsu Nitzavim, and it says it very clear, they came out, Nitzavim, and Nitzavim means erect, standing straight, Pesach Ahaleim at the entrance of their tents. Sorry, I just want to see. Unishehen Ubnehen Vitapam, and their wives and their children and their infants. And we'll see in a minute what happens, but they stand straight. What does straight mean? When do you stand erect? Full of chutzpah, exactly. Arrogant, chutzpah, confident. Nothing is bothering them. It's unbelievable. I mean, I can't even imagine the picture of what's going on over there. It's like the whole situation is so, it's a very heavy drama, but it's very scary, actually. Just want to see something. I want to show you how Rashi says it. Yotzu nitzavim, they went out direct. Rashi says it very strongly. Bekaimas kufa, with erect bearing, which means defiantly, and look at the language, lecharef ulegadef, to insult and to vilify. It's like when it says that he stood erect for 40 days of Goliath. See how he's comparing? It's so beautiful. Many years ago, I wish I'd go with Rivka. We have to go once. We went there by the valley and it was magnificent. Somebody took us where you saw where the Jewish people were. On one side was Goliath camped, and for 40 days in that he was came out and he teased the people. Teased everybody until David HaMelech came and whatever, and they had the and they had managed. But it's quite an amazing thing to think that this is what Rashi's comparing Korach, imagine, and Dasan and Avira, Mamish, to the giant Goliath, who of course is evil. He's not even Jewish, right? He's evil, evil. He wanted it. It's unbelievable to go there. When you go, what is it called, Rivka, the place? That's unbelievable. And as they made it so beautifully because they have all the stones and the... What?
Near Beit Shemesh.
It's absolutely... It's unbelievable. It's something beyond, yeah. Because you really feel like... It's like history really comes alive. You remember there and it's exact... The whole thing is... And the way they built it also, I just think it's amazing how they did... all the different stones and wrote the whole story as you go up. But anyways, so here Rashi's saying this is exactly how Korach is standing. Sorry?
There's a place called
I don't know.
What is in the desert?
Also in the desert?
It's
a different, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, all these different, yeah. Okay, there we go. Okay, so here we have, as you can see, Rashi is just, it just puts into our mind exactly how this, it's beyond, it's like really jolts you. You could just imagine how Korach and Dasan and Aviram are standing there with the most incredible chutzpah, with the most incredible arrogance, with such a hatred also, that's the point. It's an insulting, and like, it's so demeaning to Moshe and to Aaron. It's demeaning again, the most, I think for us, the hardest thing is because it's so kafri toiv. It's so like no gratitude. Even if you don't think Moshe is a holy, even if you think Moshe had selfish motives, the fact is he put himself out so much for them. And here to stand there with such a chutzpah and such a hatred, it's very difficult to understand. Okay, but it leads to the next part of the story. Okay, so here we can already understand what's happening. So now we go. But the sad part is this last part of the pasuk: the wives, the children, and the infants. Another philosophical question, which we're going to leave in a minute, because the Rabbeinu Bechaya does address it. I don't know if we'll, you know, as I say, the question still remains more than the answer. What did these poor babies do? They didn't even have a mouth. They couldn't even say anything. They didn't... Nebach, and what happens to them, we know. Let's see. Vayoyimer Moshe, and Moshe says... Bizois teidun, with this, through this you shall know, ki Hashem shlachani, that Hashem has sent me la'asaises kol ha'maisim ha'ela, to do all of these actions, and we'll see in a minute which actions he's talking about. Ki loy mi libi, it's not from my heart. I just want to read the next puzzle, because it's just so, just let's continue the flow. Im kimais kol ha'adam, yimusun ela. If these people will die, like all normal people die, like the normal death, uf kudas kol ha'adam yipakeid aleihem, and the destiny of all men is visited upon them. In other words, if they die a normal death, Loi Hashem Shlachani, Hashem didn't send me. That proves that I am Take, not who I say I am. And I shouldn't be the leader. But of course we know that's not true. Because what happens? V'im Bria Yivra Hashem. But if Hashem will create a creation, obviously we'll see what that means. Upatsisa Ha'adama Espia. Such a crazy, I mean, we know the story, but it's such a crazy way of dying. He says, and the earth opens its mouth. And what does it do? Uvala oisam, and swallows them. The eskol asher lohem, and everything that belongs to them. V'yardu chayim sha'ayla. And this part is not always so known, and this makes it even worse. And they will descend alive into the pit. V'yidaitem, then you will know, ki niyatsu ha'anoshim ha'ele es Hashem, that these men have provoked Hashem. These men are evil and they've done something wrong, and it's not me, it's them. What happens? I'm sorry, I don't want to do the Rashi, but I just want to see what happens. So here Moshe makes his declaration, and what happens? Vayehi kichaloisay ledaber, when he finished speaking, eskol, and vayehi, again, like, you know, the drum roll, something bad is about to happen. And what happens? Vatibaka ha'adama, and the ground opened, as we say. Sometimes people say like it sort of tilted, but it opened up. Asher tachteyem, which was underneath them. Vatiftach ha'aretz espia, and the earth opened up its mouth. Vativla isam, and it swallowed them. Ve'espateyem, and their homes. Ve'eskol ha'adam asher l'kairach, and all of the men that were with Kairach. Ve'eskol ha'rechush, and all of their belongings. Vayerdu heim, and they went down. V'chol asher lahem, and everything that belonged to them. Specifically, you can see how they were swallowed, chayim, alive, sha'ila, into the depth, into this pit, v'atechas aleihem haaretz, and the earth covered over them, v'yoivdu mitoich hakal, and they were lost from amongst the congregation, they were gone. And some people say what this means is forever and ever, they didn't even have olam haba. And then the last passage, I just want to read, v'chol yisrael asher sviv haseihem. And now we could just, I mean, we can't even begin to imagine. I mean, the Jewish people are all gathered. Then they see this. This is witnessed by everybody. They see it. And how do they react? Nosu, they ran. Why did they run? There was this petrifying, it was absolutely petrifying. And what did they run from? So the pasuk says, Likailam, at their sound, ki amru, because they said, pen tivla einu haaretz, lest the earth swallow us up. Why do you think they thought that? What must be? What must be going through their minds if they thought that the earth can also swallow them?
That they
They're also guilty, right? They must have felt guilt. If they didn't feel guilt, they wouldn't be afraid. They must have realized, oh my gosh, who knows what's next? Because they also doubted Moshe, as we said. And as we mentioned, that doesn't just mean Moshe, they doubted Hashem. So if they doubted Moshe, they doubted Hashem, who knows what's next? We could also be swallowed up. And just one more pasuk, I think, is the end of the perek. Because let's see, and then we'll go back. And that was Kairach, and we're not sure exactly who, but definitely Kairach's family, and all the belongings, and Dasan and Aviram. But then, the Eish Yotza Me'eis Hashem, and a fire came forth from Hashem, and consumed the 250 men who were offering the incense. So we have two punishments. One punishment is the being swallowed up, the earth opening, and the other punishment is the fire, which took the 250 men. Which one did Kairach suffer? That's interesting.
Which
one? Which way did he die,
yeah.
Kairach?
Open pit.
Open pit, that's what we always think, right? Yeah, we always think that. Do you learn? Is that right? Is that 100%? I know there's. I know that. Riva, that's a very good question. Keep it for a minute. What did you say? It's not very clear. Did you see? It didn't say Kairach before. It said his family. There's actually such interesting different opinions. The Evan Ezra brings opinions. He says some people say Kairach actually died both ways. However, that works. He was burned and swallowed up. Yes. And then followed up, exactly right. Some people say no, that Kairach was only burned. The Evan Ezra actually thinks he's only burned because he says like this. Don't forget, the Kairach, what was he doing? He was also with the, remember he had that pan of Keteris. So, as we know, the Evan Ezra always looks at things quite rationally, and he says it makes sense that the people, Korach's family, would have been swallowed up. But Korach was standing with the 250 men and with Aaron with the pan. So it makes sense that the fire should have consumed Korach. The fact that it doesn't say so clearly, that's not such a big question. Because obviously he would have been burned, it says, because obviously he's holding the pan, so that makes the most sense. But there are also opinions that he was just swallowed up. So there's different opinions, depends how you look at it. But we see something quite incredible, that this is something which is crazy, and we have to understand why this kind of death and what's going on here. So let's go back a little bit. I just want to see a bit of the Rashis and see some of the Mefarshim. And as you mentioned, Korach's sons. Quite a strange, and also how could it be that the children, what did the poor children do? Yeah, and the wives? Well, the wives were just as guilty. We said the wives were even more guilty, remember? Yeah, that was Ayn Ben Peles, so they didn't die. Korach's wife was the one that she actually revved up the whole thing, so she's not innocent here at all. Okay, let's see what happens here. I just want to see the Rashi of, okay. Oh, yes, sorry, to go back to Pasuk Lamed Rashi. Okay. Oh, just Pasuk Lamed Ches. Because Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, in Pasuk Lamed Ches Rashi, it says, La'asay says, Kol ha'maisim ha'ele, to perform all of these acts. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, Sha'asisi al pi adibur, which I have done in accordance with the speech of Hashem, Losseis la Aaron kahuna gedayla, giving Aaron the high priesthood, uvanav signe hakunan, and his children to become the skan kayanim, velitzofen nesiha kahasi, and elitzofen the prince of the kayan family. Meaning, when Moshe Rabbeinu says that I have been following Hashem's instructions, he's not referring to right now about what he's organizing over here with Korach. He's talking previously, because the whole taina was that the reason the whole thing is happening is because of what Korach was complaining about that Moshe did before. And he's trying to show them that every single thing I did, and the Ramban says it actually quite clearly, because Moshe Rabbeinu uses the words that Hashem shlachani, Hashem sent me. From the minute that I was at the burning bush, and I had no choice, but I accepted the mission. What's the mission? The mission is called a shlichus. That's what it's called. That's what a mission from Hashem is. I became the messenger of God, and every single thing I did, when I went to Paray, when I went to the Jewish people, every single thing I did from then on was directly commanded by Hashem. And this is what he wants them to understand. So it's nothing to do with my own, whatever decisions. And then he says, the very interesting pasuk we said, I just want to share one thing. I'll tell you orally because I know we're not going to have time to do this one inside. It was the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh. He says something so beautiful. He says, what does it mean, Moshe Rabbeinu says that everything was from Hashem? So Moshe Rabbeinu shares from them something interesting because he says, Hashem shlachani, Hashem sent me. And then he says, I didn't do it from my heart. What does that mean, from my heart and Hashem sends me? Because he's talking about two different ways that that Moshe Rabbeinu could have, perhaps, influenced Hashem, meaning to say like this. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu is an incredible leader. We know Hashem loves Moshe, and he's very loyal. Moshe is loyal to Hashem, and therefore Hashem is loyal to Moshe, so to speak. So the people, what they could think is like this. They can say, okay, it's true Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu follows Hashem, but isn't it possible that sometimes, just like, you have a business that runs successfully. So there's the CEO, and then he has people who work for him, and they're in charge of different things. Usually, in a successful business, how does the business work? You have business meetings once in a while, and the CEO consults with the people who he trusts, who works for him on the ground. Maybe, they thought, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu sometimes shares with Hashem his thoughts, and of course he only follows Hashem's instructions, but once he has shared what he wants, well then Hashem says, of course I'll do what you want, because it makes sense, it's good, he wants to please Moshe. Like, for example, maybe Moshe might have said to Hashem, I think Aaron would be a good Kohen Gadol. And then Hashem said, you know what, I think you're right, and then Hashem would send Moshe, and he would do. So of course Moshe would never do anything on his own, but perhaps Moshe would have shared it with Hashem. That's one way. The other thing is even more. We know that Hashem doesn't need somebody to tell him what he wants. Maybe Moshe could have wanted something in his heart. That's what he says, Milibi, right, in my heart. And because, obviously, Hashem feels what I want, and it's not only because of Hashem knowing what's in his heart, but it's just like that with people that you're close to. If you're very close to somebody, they don't have to tell you everything that they want. You can feel it a lot of times. And if you love them, you'll try to engineer things that it should work in the way that they want, right? You sense it. So you make things work that way. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, I want you to understand. It's not what I said to Hashem. It's not what I wanted in my heart. I am a type of person who, not the humility that I mean over here is not just a concept of humility, of feeling less than. I am a person who works just as a messenger from Hashem. It's not about what I want. It's not about what I think is right. It's not what I think is better. It's about fulfilling the mission from Hashem. You cannot suspect that I have any influence on any of the decisions that Hashem makes. And this is what he wants to clarify. It's a very powerful thing. And that's why he says it like that. So have no tiredness. I just want to see one or two Marashis. Okay, he says, a very interesting language that he uses. V'im bria chadasha. If Hashem will create a new creation, right? To put them to death, as Rashi says. B'misa through a death. Shaloi meispa adam, through which no person has ever died, right? So Rashi says, atain up until this point. U'mahi habriya. And what is the creation? U'patasa adam aspia. The earth will open up its mouth and it will swallow them. Then you will know that they provoked Hashem, and that I have spoken by the word of Hashem. And the as he says, Rabbi Seinu Darshu, how did the parashu, they explain it? In Bria, so if the mouth of creation, if the earth is a creation meaning, and we know in Pirkei Avos it says Hashem created it in the 6 days of creation, so if it's already there, fine, that's fantastic. If it's not, that's why he makes it a double language. Create it now. It's almost like Hashem is like, create it now. Make it a new creation. Yesh me'ayin, something from nothing. It's fine, because this is the way Moshe Rabbeinu feels, and obviously Hashem agrees, that this is the way it should happen. And it's not just Moshe. He senses what Hashem wants, as we said before. Misheshes yimei breishis, from the 6 days of creation, mutav, but if not, may Hashem create. And I just wanted to tell you, what was the sound that they heard that made them run? So very interesting. This is quite gory, but he says, "Bishvil hakol," because of the sound hayetza that emerged, al bliyasan, upon their being swallowed up. So here, this is interesting because we have many midrashim that when the people were being swallowed up, we say that they didn't die instantly. That would have been a very much more compassionate death. But rather, they were swallowed up alive. And the question is, what happened to them after? There's all kinds of different midrashim, as we know. Not just midrashim, but there's stories in the Gemara of one great tzaddik, one great Tana, actually. He was traveling in the desert, and it says that he stopped all of a sudden, and he heard something underneath him, and he put his ear to the ground, and he says, I heard a sound coming from the ground that's saying, Moshe emes v'sayrasa emes, right? Moshe is truth, and his Torah is true. And that was Korach's family, whatever that means on a simple level. But the point is that when they went down, they were screaming from fear, obviously, screaming from regret, and screaming to tell the people, we made a big mistake. Moshe is truth, and his Torah is truth. And this is a very powerful thing. And despite that, according to many opinions, they remain there. They didn't go up to Gan Eden. They're there. I don't know what will happen. Mashiach will come. But they have a very long punishment, as we say. Whatever that means. We don't have to dwell on the punishment. The point is not that. But the big question always is, a lot of things. I want to just show you a few of them first. Let's see which ones. Go, if you go after the last page of the Chumash, we won't do all inside. The Kriyakar I told you orally. Let me just see if there was anything the Arachayim I told you. I want to just look at number 3, the Ebenezer. I just want to show you inside how he says. So Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, you think I did this all by myself? Which thing were they most upset about? To exchange the Bechayrim, as we said, with the Levim, because initially, who were the ones who were serving were going to be the ones to serve in the Mishkan? It should have been the Bechayrim. And then after the Chet Ha'egel, as we know, it became the Levim. V'dakid davar gadol haya. It's interesting, because we just learned the stories. And we just, I don't know, sometimes we learn it a bit remotely. We don't put ourselves as if we're there. But imagine if you were there. Every single family has a bechor, right? A bechor is an eldest. An eldest means that you have representation from the entire Jewish nation. Just think about it. What happens? Comes Chet Ha'egel, comes the sin of the golden calf, and the eldest also sinned. So therefore, the privilege of being the holy ones was taken away from them. And who is it given to? One tribe. You realize that means all the other tribes are not represented anymore. It's a very big thing to do. So that's what the Ibn Ezra says. He says, Davar gadol haya umachis la asher einenu maimin, and it would make. Oh, I should show people. I'm sorry. I'm always forgetting about the Zoom. Oh, that's sorry. Screen share. I'll show you here inside. Actually, it's also bigger for me. Okay, so he says to show what to make angry to the one who doesn't believe. Lahasir habchayim mekunasam. Anybody who doesn't have absolute faith that Moshe Rabbeinu is acting because Hashem told him to, it would cause them. Of course, they would be upset because it's a terrible thing to do. And he says the lahashiv hamayla lemishpachas Moshe Levada. Right? What did he do? He took all of the advantage, all the greatness, to his own family. We know why it happened, because of the sin of the golden calf. Right, because they brought up different karbonis in at the golden calf to the idol, and therefore their privilege was taken away from them. So I want to show you. I want to see the next pasuk. If there was, I want to show you something very interesting that the Ramban says. I think we might have. Very, very fascinating. So it's a short one. I'll just read you quickly. He says, so the pasuk is telling us that, right, Moshe Rabbeinu says to the people, don't touch any of the belongings of Kairach, because if you do, you might perish. So what happens? He says, suru no me'al olea nashim harishayim ha'ila, right? Move away from these very bad people. Pen tisafu b'chol chatasam, because maybe you will also perish with their sin. V'al tigu b'chol asher lehem, don't touch anything that belongs to them. This is number four. V'hatam she'im lo yasuru misham, because if you do not move away from there, yihyu nivla'im b'fi haaretz, you'll be swallowed up in the mouth of the ground. V'yazhirein, he warned them, she'lo yigu lahatzil mimamainim, they shouldn't try to save any of the money. Davar, anything, v'lakach zlan, to take for them. Kicheremu, because as we said, it's cherem, meaning it's like excommunicated, it's untouchable. And then he quotes from the Ibn Ezra of Avram Amar, She'im ba'u lahatzil mamainam, yardu sha'ol k'mayhem, you will also be swallowed up like Kairach, if they would have touched some of the money. And where do we have a previous example to this? V'im kain, yezekitam v'tabet ishtay me'acharav, v'tehi nitziv melach. Interesting, fascinating. It's comparing it to the wife of Lot, who turned around and she became like a pillar of salt. Salt, we know, was how Sodom was destroyed, with the sulfur, with the salt, right? She turns around. In other words, she touches, even in her mind, the fate of the people. She wants to see what's happening over here. You want to come close and see and touch what happens to Kairach? You will suffer the same fate. It's very interesting, the different comparisons of the different stories, but you can see how Kairach is considered, what level he's on, like Sodom and like the Nachash and like Goliath. It's quite incredible. I just want to see. It just doesn't matter about the term.
They couldn't see destruction.
Yeah, well, they could see it, but they can't have any part, any benefit from it. That's the point here. No benefit whatsoever.
Yeah. She wasn't allowed to turn around.
No.
So don't watch what's going to happen to.
Exactly. Well, she wasn't even allowed, but over here they were allowed to see, and Moshe Dafka wanted them to see. Here it's a little different, because part of their rehabilitation was actually to see what happened to Kairach. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they needed it. Okay, I just wanted, there's something very important, a few important points, and time's going so fast, but I wanted just to see which part of the Ramban. Let's see something beautiful that he talks about. It's quite a harsh story, this, but I want to show you, look at the Ramban number 6 on the second column. I want to show you something interesting. He talks about the fact that this is a new creation, a yesh me'ayin, as we say. So the Ibn Ezra says an interesting thing. He says, he quotes, if you see on number 6 in the second column, I circled the lamid. He says, v'im bria yivare Hashem, if Hashem will create a new creation, right? So the Ibn Ezra says, he quotes from the Ibn Ezra, and he says, yesh ayinim. So the Ibn Ezra actually brings other opinions that he doesn't agree with. And he says, ki bria taira al himatze yesh me'ayin. That what this means when you talk about the word bria, when the Torah uses that word, it means yesh me'ayim, something from nothing. So it's like an absolute new creation that's never been, and it's something from nothing. The Ibn Ezra doesn't agree. He says this is not something from nothing. Why? Why is it not something from nothing? Because he says, aval perusha kitam gzeira, gazra actually. Gazra means an absolute total wiping of away. Well, what does he mean? He means like this. And he brings another pasuk because he says, the Ebenezer says like this, how could you say that this is a something, a creation from nothing here, when there has been earthquakes before? This sounds like an earthquake, right? That's what it is. An earthquake means the ground opens up. Now, lately, we've had more. What do they call it when a sinkhole, you know? It's almost, that's even more like Kairach in a way, where a sinkhole, you know? Remember on Bellevue Road when they went, when they open, like there's a hole and everything gets sucked in? I don't know why they've... What? I know. Earthquake doesn't swallow, but it can. It can. It, like, rift. Because it does. If you think about the two... It opens, exactly. Things sort of fall apart. You're right. Things don't fall in. This is different, 100%.
It's more like a hurricane and the ground.
It's a few national things. It's a few natural disasters together. Exactly right. So the Ebenezer doesn't think that it's a new creation because he says there has been similar things. But the Ramban says, no. This is very different, as we're saying. This is not like other earthquakes. What's the difference? So he gives a few interesting things. He says like this, so he says it's true, it's correct, that this is something like from nothing. Why? He says, because this is the only way that the Torah, this is the language the Torah uses for something from nothing. And he brings, what does he mean? How is this? He says, it's true that an earthquake is not a new thing. Because that's the word bikiya, where the land is, so to speak, sort of shaking, as you see. But he says, but what happens over here? Psichas ha'aretz espia, when the land opens up its mouth, livloya, to swallow, hu chidush loy niyem ha'ilam. This is something that has never been. Ki kasher tivaka ha'adama, k'moshe nasa pamim rabim birash. When the earth, so to speak, has this concept of a earthquake, ha'nikra zilzala, Tisha'er psucha, he says something interesting. If it does happen, it's like if the, let's say you have, what is it called, the plates of the earth, and they shift, so it remains shifted. It just remains that way. So if, let's say, if there is a hole, if something does happen where there's damage, so it just remains, right? What's the difference over here? Something very big, a very big difference. Not only is it that the mouth opened up, but even more than that, what happened over here, he says, and as he says, Gam Yumala Habaka Mayim, and the earth, so to speak, becomes filled with water. Viyaseka Gam, that's usually our earthquake, and like there's like rivulets and whatever things are running. Aval, Shetiftach Vitiskar Miyad. But for something to open and close immediately, now that's something different. Ka'adma Paiseach Piv Livloya, like a person opening up his mouth to swallow. The Yiskar Isai Achare Biloy, and he closes his mouth right after he swallows. This is something new. Zeadavar Nishadish Piyamahu, this is something which new that happened on that day. Ki'iluhu Nivra Me'ayin, as if from nothing. That's what it means that the land covered them up. And that's what he's saying also, a very, very big thing. That what does this mean that it covered them? It's very interesting. Also, the Mepharshim say what's unique? It only swallowed specific people. You don't have that. It's not, you know, you don't have where you have an earthquake, which only, like, in other words, it's so discriminatory in the sense, as we said, the Midrashim actually described that if anybody would have not been there or any belonging, it would have gotten in somehow. So this is a very specific way that it opened and it closed and covered them up immediately in a way where you didn't even see where it opened before. There was no remnant of it. That's the big thing. That's something that never, ever has happened before. And he says something quite incredible. Also, the Medrash tells us, this is a very fascinating thing, the Baal HaTorim also says, he says that this was the opening of Gehenim. And a fascinating thing, he says that where is Gehenim found? I know we would never think of it. It says in Yerushalayim somewhere. We always talk about the opening up to heaven. How does Yerushalayim come to the Midbar over here? But it moved over. Whatever. This is obviously all things that we don't understand. But the point is that it was somehow or other where he was sucked into the ground. And obviously it is some type of a Gehenim, his Gehenim for sure. And it's a place which was an incredibly harsh, shocking, terrible punishment that happened to them. Why? Why this punishment? Why swallowed up from the ground? Of all kinds of punishments. I mean, it's very, you know, nice for teaching children, very exciting, but why? what's the point of swallowing up from the ground? Do you remember we mentioned, it was a few weeks ago, we mentioned that the Kliokar said, when the people were, initially Kairach, and then the people followed Kairach, his whole thing was, he was claiming that Moshe Rabbeinu was doing things on his own, right, as we said. Moshe Rabbeinu himself is dividing the people, remember as we said, really they were the ones dividing. Moshe Rabbeinu is assuming leadership, which as Kairach said, who says you need a leader? Perhaps we can all be leaders, right? As we say nowadays, right? Everybody's equal. We could all be leaders. Who says you have to have a hierarchy? And we said what that really means, if you think about it, a hierarchy means that there is somebody who comes before you. That's what a hierarchy means. Means somebody comes before you who knows perhaps a little more than you, even though nowadays you're not allowed to say that. Not only do they know a little more than you, they might even have a higher position. Not position as far as everybody obviously has a, we're not saying people are not equal in the sense that people are not beloved by Hashem. That's not the point. The point is everybody has a different mission and a different purpose, each one a unique purpose in the, to do in this world, which meant that what Kairach was doing ultimately was actually denying Hashem. That's what he was doing. Because he was denying that there's even a master on the whole world. To him, it was each person can do as they feel. Right, as we say, if I feel that I want to serve in the Mishkan, well, why can't I? Right? Who says I can't? Who says that it could only be the one designated by Hashem? So in other words, this is a total denial of God himself. Right? That's what we said. Therefore, it says, what we had to have here is the God who created heaven and earth will show his dominion, his rulership, his mastery over heaven and earth. They were swallowed by the ground and they were burned. The fire comes from the heaven. So both things happened here. The ground opened up to show who created the earth, who's the master, who's the one who makes everything on earth work the way it should. And as the Kliokar says beautifully, you know, in Pirkei Avos we have a fascinating thing. It says a person should daven for the welfare of the government. Why? Because ilmalei ish esrei ehu, Chayim b'loy, right? If not for government, then there's anarchy. Each person will swallow his friend. It's almost as we see nowadays. Each, and the language used, swallow his friend. That's why it says they wanted anarchy, so they get swallowed. They wanted the world, in a sense, what they, not that they wanted that necessarily, but the ramifications of what would have happened had they succeeded would have been that there would be no sense of hierarchy, no sense of leadership, no sense of respect, no sense of the fact that there is a higher power, because Moshe Rabbeinu just represents Hashem. That's all he does. He's not a person on his own. He's representing Hashem's will. There's nobody above you that you should put your will a little bit aside and listen to something that is a bit higher than you. Well, if that's the case, then the earth has to swallow you up. And that's actually what happened. I just want to finish with one small thing, and I know we missed so many beautiful thoughts, but I just want to tell you what the Rabbeinu Bechai, he says something really wild, and he says like this, he brings, it's based on Kabbalah, he says, because this story is not understandable. And the truth is, as we said at the beginning, we don't profess to understand, and a lot of it is not understandable, the whole thing. And especially this part, this philosophical question, why the poor little children, what's going on? So he says that really we have to understand that this is a much bigger story than what we're seeing here. And this story started many years before. And he says beautifully, the story is actually started from when we had what we call in Hebrew, Dor HaFloga, the tower, when they built that tower, remember, just after the Mabel, right? They built it and they wanted to, you know, they thought they could run the world. Same thing as here, right? Building the tower, what was one of the big things? They thought, who says there's a God, right? We're God. We can go just as high. In other words, a human being doesn't have to be subservient to anything higher. Not his will, not his mind, nothing. It's, you know, after the tower, fascinatingly enough, it came to another story, and that was the story of, I think it's Sedaim. So I just want to make sure. It's fascinating. He says it's two stories, and then comes this one, is the third one. And it's a Gilgal of all of them. I just want to see it inside. Sorry. It's important to see it. It's unbelievable. Sorry. Where is it? Because he asks the big question that he asks is, why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't daven for them? Why is it that he was so quick? It looks like he was quick to get them punished and ask for such a crazy punishment. But I just want to see, and what was the second story that he brings that it comes to? Hi. Let me see. Sorry. Maybe I should read it inside and I forgot now. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Why? No, no, I'm not seeing it. Sorry. Ay, ay, ay. See this. Ay, sorry about that. That's not in this one. Okay. Oh, yeah. So first one is, as we said, the Dora Floggy at Stoim. That's what I thought. Okay. So he says that the second thing is the people that, the Stoim, that come to Lloyd's house, these are the same people. He says the people of Stoim are the same people as the people of the Hafloga. They become blind. So the people of the Hafloga, it's like a warning. Hashem separates them. They don't learn. So they come to Stoim. They become Stoim. They become very evil. And there Hashem blinds them. Over here now, they are Koyrach and his people. And Hashem says, that's enough. The third time enough. Now they're going to be swallowed up. What's the idea? The idea being that these people, unfortunately, have whatever that's supposed to mean Kabbalistically. The idea is that they're, as we mentioned last week, the evil is so bad, and we see that they're so bad that they really have no hope in a sense. The only thing, unfortunately, that they're doing is influencing others. So Moshe wants, let's not look at it in the negative that Moshe wants them to die. Rather, the positive is he wants to protect the other people that they shouldn't be influenced, that the negativity shouldn't spread. And that's really the way to look at it. This is the love that Moshe has, that he wants to make sure that the rest of the Jewish people and the world remains intact. And there shouldn't be the spread of this terrible philosophy. So it's the Dor HaFloga going into the Sedaim, coming into Koyrach, and now they're swallowed up. And that's why in the first words of Koyrach, it says Koyrach came to Moshe to present his argument. Unkulah said, V'ispaleg Koyrach. Ispaleg means to separate, but it's the same as Dor HaFloga. That's the language that's used. So these are the same neshamas, whatever that's supposed to mean, from that time. Whatever it means, the point is, obviously it's quite a harsh story, but for us, really, there's a lot of beautiful lessons, and you can see something powerful again. As Moshe Rabbeinu, I think it was the Ramban or the Kliyakar that brought it beautifully, the language that a person who humbles themselves at the end is elevated. The person who is arrogant is the one who unfortunately is drawn down. We should have the presence of mind even in a difficult situation and not allow things to cloud, even though it seems quite challenging and the people are not very good, but still you can find good in everything and in the people around you. And remain, as we can see, as Moshe Rabbeinu, the most incredible loyal servant to Hashem, and still, despite the fact that they really are coming to threaten him and his family, be able to see good in the Jewish people and want only the best for them. And this is a very hard thing, but we learn from Moshe and we try. Okay. All right.